Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I am Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 9, titled Squeeze. Aaron, what's the title all about, first of all? We never do this anymore. What do they mean by squeeze?
Yeah, they've been pretty literal. It means that Daryl had a million shares of GameStop outstanding, all shorted.
That's the nightmare, right?
And Carol saw him exposed, and man, she bought up all them shares and just squoze him until he couldn't be squeezed no more.
Let me tell you, you don't want to be holding GameStop when the apocalypse hits.
Or any stock. I think all that stuff will be greatly devalued in the case of 99.9% of the world's inhabitants turning into drooling zombies.
Likely.
Although short-term consumption goes way up. Who knows what that'll do for the stock market? Consumption of brain matter goes through the roof. The podcast or the title of this episode refers to them squeezing through tight passages of the horde cave, the herd cave, possibly referring to the hold the Alpha has on Negan's nuts.
I was gonna say maybe the hold he's got on her as well. Oh boy, I'm deeply uncomfortable with that scene. Deeply.
Yeah, there's a lot of squeezing and squozing going on. That's what I think it means. I'm curious. What did you think of the episode?
I liked the episode. I thought this was one of the most effective things they've done, and maybe because I have a little bit of Carol in me, as regards to claustrophobia. I could totally see myself getting into one of these narrow passages and just not quite freezing up the way she does, but feeling very uncomfortable. And that's how I felt this entire episode while they were, you know, jumping across these pits full of walkers and balancing on precariously on these ledges with hundreds of feet of fall below them, squeezing through these passages. Yeah, I felt it. It was very effective. And you know, you kind of know everything that's coming. Like I told you before the podcast, I thought this episode was both super exciting and somehow super boring as well, because they head into these passages and you know, okay, well, the next inevitable thing here is you got a big guy like Jerry. He's not going to be able to fit through somewhere, and there are going to be walkers behind him, right? And they're going to chase him down. Maybe they eat him, maybe they don't, but you kind of saw those beats coming, but just the situation is so intense that it was really effective. So I enjoyed it.
And I think that they've put a newfound kind of fear of God for the core characters. That, like, in fact, I would have been very nervous for Carol and Daryl had I not known that they have a spinoff show waiting for them.
Right.
I mean, I guess you could always say, oh, maybe it's a prequel spinoff. I don't think so. So Jerry, I honestly thought was shaping up to be a goner.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I don't want to see Jerry screaming and get eaten alive and his arms are pinned to his side and he can't wiggle forward or backwards. And these guys are just eating him from the legs up. Like, this is going to I really thought they were. And it really, like, I was watching a lot of that, like, later part. I was watching a lot of that later part of that episode with my hand over my face going, oh, my God, what's going to happen? I was really afraid. For my man Jerry is what I'm saying.
Yeah, me too.
And the Southern Hoosier came out, apparently.
I've
been in Jerry's position. I have been the 6'2" fat guy trying to wiggle through the volcano hole of Buckner's Cave.
I was with you, like, yeah.
You got guys behind me and guys trying to get my fat ass out of there. And I'm like, can you imagine being that way with zombies? It's like... Very visceral. Yeah, you and I ran around in caves together in Southern Indiana, speaking of. So maybe that's why the Hoosier came out of me.
Yeah, could be. I will also say, I think Carol at this point, like, this spinoff is going to be Carol in exile and Daryl for some reason feeling bad about it and going with her, right? Like, she is cruising for another exiling. It's insane. She's already been exiled once.
She's styling for another exiling if she doesn't watch out. Yeah.
Right, man. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I feel like my prediction about her getting thrown out of the community is going to be accurate.
And Daryl continuing to back her play. I mean, you know, he said, like, I thought it was pretty generous of him saying, you're acting, the way you're acting is going to get people you care for hurt. It's already started to happen. And in this episode, like, I do think that you've got the situation where who's stuck in the cave? Connie and is it Magna?
I think it's Magna.
And they've built up an effective relationship between Connie and Daryl to where like he's really pissed and invested in this, and like Carol, you know, begging him to condemn it. I thought that stuff really worked. But I also think that like one or both of those, and if Magna dies, I don't care. I'm done with her. But like I think that both of them are probably gonna get out after Daryl finds them.
I think so.
Yeah. Although they did make a big deal of how bad Magna left things with the Yumika. Yumika, what? God damn it.
Bow girl.
Yeah. Literally.
Bow girl.
Yumiko. I don't know. So like that's points for and against the favor, because like as much dread that they built up in me for the main cast, like Jerry's gotten off the hook. This episode, if these guys survive the cave-in, that's going to kind of reduce the pressure. It's one of those things where it's like, if you know, they built up a nice fear in the audience. I don't think they want to let that go to sleep. So they can't put these people in too many like unbelievably crazy situations to have an escape. Because honestly, didn't I say this last week that like this felt like the only way they're going to get out of this is like if Alpha pulls some kind of James Bond villain bullshit of like, no, I'm not going to watch them die. I'm just going to leave some Lackman and some henchmen here and assume everything goes according to plan. Like this is some Dr. Evil shit. And it happens like in the first 5 minutes of the episode. So and she's not too busy to watch them die, you know, because she's running around scheming against Gamma and fucking Negan by the end of the episode. So there's a little bit of the Walking Dead backsliding with their old tricks of.
Yeah.
You know, preposterous situations that are so exciting, but they don't actually pan out the way you'd think they would. Still have a huge amount of faith in Ms. Kang.
Oh, yeah. And some of the scenes that they need to nail here, they really do like that. A couple of scenes between Daryl and Carol are tearjerkers, man. They are heartfelt and honest in a way that you don't see from a lot of shows, let alone The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And again, the cave setup was exciting and cool. It's just, I don't know. I feel like somebody should have died. Like if Jerry had died, like as much as I'd have hated that, that would have felt like my fear would have been completely still intact. Or even if Magna had died or Connie would be a big blow at this point because I care a lot about Daryl and Daryl cares a lot about her. And she's a cool character. Kind of mixed this week.
Sure, I'm with you. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, we start off with the recap here with the survivors trapped in the cave where they were last week, and Alpha is staring at Carol from above, and Carol screams. A primal scream.
Primal Carol scream.
And then Alpha leaves a couple of skin freaks to guard the cave's exit.
Damn it. Damn it. Damn it, Carol. What the hell? You done screwed them all. That's it, right? That's just there's nothing more to say about this. There's a big zombie rave going underground.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. It's a pretty short scene, and there are going to be a lot of underground scenes, so let's get to more of them. Okay. Magna tries to climb out. She fails. They look for another way around another way out. Daryl finds one, but it's across a chasm of walkers. But there are a couple little stones they could jump across, so they do that. Kelly's super nervous, but they all make it across. Daryl uses a severed walker arm to make a torch and begins exploring the tunnels while the rest talk about their situation. There's some blame being thrown at Carol here, but Daryl kind of shuts it down and says, look, gotta find a way out. You don't got time for this.
Yeah, I gotta use my match method to find us a passage out of here.
Good for him.
Long matches, long burning matches.
Smart.
It's a good thing he brought those into the cave. I really like the arm torch. That's pretty, they're pretty choice. You know what I hated? Magna criticizing anybody for anything.
Right, with her like supply stealing ass.
This is offensive to have her question Carol for her decision making, for her not caring about the group, and for her taking unilateral action. Literally anyone in this group could have levied this criticism against Carol. They'd have known better. But anyone in this group could have levied this criticism against Carol, and it would have landed better. But Magna is the one person who is just the worst, so she can't. Mm-hmm. And this whole damn episode, I guess she's got this nervous antsy energy because she left things bad with her girlfriend, and she might die before she can make things right. Whatever. I hate her. Yeah, I don't buy their relationship, and I hope she dies before the season's over. So there you go. Keep digging yourself in deeper, Magna.
Yep.
Seems I'm to be him. Your life's motto.
I thought there were some cool shots here, like that overhead of Daryl when he first jumps to the rock and all the arms are reaching in, and he's kind of, you know, got the superhero just landed from a full flight kind of pose.
Right.
Pretty good. And I'm surprised, like, Jerry's a fucking jackrabbit, man. He had no problem jumping across these
big
things.
Big man, light on his feet. Sometimes he got to be. Yeah. I really appreciated the sports arena aesthetic of the zombie herd. Like anytime a human stumbled, got a little too close, the whole stadium's in an uproar. The zombies are kind of always like rah, 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 but someone stumbles, rah, rah, rah. They get all riled up about it. I thought it was great. Like, yeah, 50,000 zombie fans going crazy in the arena. mm-hmm. for Connie almost biffing it, for Magna almost falling backwards into the pit. Like it was like, I got a pretty good sound system in the living room, and it was an experience. The zombie crowd going wild.
I'm surprised I didn't want to send one person across first to maybe test. Let me maybe go see if that's an actual exit, because, you know, Daryl's
that's true
uncorrected apocalypse eyesight probably can't tell in the dark if that's actually an exit.
I the more I think about it, the more I think they should have had one other person as a little bit more expendable. Not quite a red shirt, not quite a person that, like, we don't even know their name of, but like
Boston Rob.
Yeah. I was about to say Boston Rob. Someone of Boston Rob's caliber. He could have, like, biffed it here or getting eaten behind, like, something.
Oh, that fucking annoying ass teenager.
Any of those guys. Any of the teenagers have been tormenting Lydia. Because I do think that Magna and Connie maybe sort of not surviving is that danger. But this feels like a crazy dangerous operation they undertook in the enemy territory with the enemy's knowledge and, like, hunkering around their super weapon. And they were allowed to get out pretty much unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
Had it not been for Carol's crazy ass revenge plan, they would have gotten out entirely unscathed. And I don't like that. I don't like that. That bothers me.
So we go to Alpha's group, and she expresses some surprise that the survivors knew where to find the Horde, which surprised me. She thinks they might have spies in the camp or around the camp being sent into the camp. Puts more patrols in place, and she also sends Gamma out to the border to let their scouts know that they failed. She doesn't suspect Gamma, but Negan probably does. He gives an ominous sort of knowing look in Gamma's direction. She didn't plan this? I don't know, man. It's weird, because I expected there to be some level of involvement from Alpha here. There was that scene, right, where she told Gamma, like, I got some information for you or whatever.
Yeah.
Did she go out to Aaron after that?
Well, I think the thing that sinks Gamma is that she was told to go to the border and relay this message, and Gamma never even went to the border. Like, Gamma just...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I'm not saying, like, how does she know that Gamma's a spy? I'm saying, like, I thought that Alpha was in on this. Like, she was feeding false
I think she is up until this point. Like, it's the combination of these guys being knowing exactly where to go in the herd and Gamma not checking in. Like, I think she didn't suspect Gamma at all, because Gamma's playing a role until Negan talked to her. Then she was suspicious. But when she failed to check in with the border patrol or whatever, then she's like, oh, well, what, you know, that. Yeah, I mean. And it's also weird because she's talking to Beta as if, you know, bring her to me and I'll determine the truth of the situation. But she's fucking Negan like she knows the truth that Gamma screwed her over.
Oh, and yeah, later on. Sure.
Yeah. So what you are correct, I think, maybe what you're saying is that, like, Gamma didn't tell Alpha, or Alpha didn't tell Gamma to reveal the location of the herd.
Exactly. Which shocked me. I'm like, well, that's weird, because I thought we had a scene that implied that earlier.
I thought they did too, but, like, I think we even had a brief discussion about this last week, that there was enough ambiguity in the Thora Birch's performance that I couldn't tell exactly when she started exceeding her mandate and when she didn't, you know?
So was this trap that is apparently set there for people who stumble upon it, just
though,
like,
right?
Is it just like a precaution? Like, oh, in case finds this.
Did Alpha just blunder into that clearing where she's looking for the latrine to take a shit, and she just happens to see Carol, and it's like, aha, I'll lead them.
It was a little weird to find out that she didn't plant that info.
Yeah, because so that's the other thing. Is it possible that this is an even longer con to, like, prove the loyal, like, she's got some kind of crazy canary scheme that's going to three-way prove the loyalties of Negan, Gamma, and Beta? Because that's the only thing that kind of makes sense in the totality of everything. Because, why would Alpha run back? Like, they found location of the Horde, but they don't know it's underground in a cave. Why would she lead them to it?
Some Ozymandias level shit, if that's what's happening here.
Yeah. And then I don't know, like, I just, the other thing is, yeah, like, how can your people let them out of the cave? It feels like there is a little bit some more Machiavellian stuff, but also maybe the show just decided to be dumb. Hey, we needed a big cliffhanger for the end of this season, but going into the next, and it's not going to be the big cliffhanger because it's not the end of the season, so fuck it.
You go know, back and listen to the first 8 seasons of coverage of this show and tell me, you come to me and tell me whether you think it's Machiavellian or just a dumb blunder that they made. You tell me.
I know. If it wasn't the reign of Kang, I would be saying this is blunder, but like, it could be 40 chess.
Oh boy. Sure. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt until proven wrong. So the survivors hang out in the caves. Magna's going stir crazy. Ask Daryl for some matches. Carol tries to talk to Daryl, but she's making his life difficult, and she tries to explain. Daryl gets it, but he can't let it go because it's affecting the people that they care about, and she promises not to bullshit him anymore, and Daryl is satisfied with that proclamation.
This is the hell of when people you love lie to you and getting these patterns of behavior, because like, you want to believe that, like, hey, you know, just don't bullshit me. That's all I'm asking here. And they continue to bullshit you. And then fuck. So get Daryl and Carol entering a really interesting phase of their relationship here, where like, apparently just can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
She's obsessed with this revenge. She's addicted to it.
She effectively, what she's saying is, I care more about my dead son and then getting revenge for him than I care about any of you who are still living in here with me. That sucks.
And I think it really will bother Daryl, because Daryl's extending to her the same the courtesy that would extend to her in their. He even says, like, you know, like, I can see how you feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I would want to do the exact same thing unless you, of all people, stood in my way, because I would think that would shake me out of. And maybe Daryl's bullshitting, you know.
Sure.
But it's going to be a blow, because Carol, and Carol at some point recognizes the truth of this.
Mm-hmm.
That she's putting everyone in risk, that she's risking everything just for the memory of Henry. But she just can't fucking stop it, man. It's interesting because this feels like an analog for some kind of addiction, like a substance abuse or like a psychological addiction. And
especially with the trucker speed she was doing couple episodes
that's
ago.
The weird thing is they explicitly made it about a substance abuse when she started doing the meth, but like, I think she had, maybe she's still doing that. Has she got like a supply?
Maybe.
This whole episode
paints her as just intensely tortured by the death of Henry, which I buy. Like, I don't it's a second quote unquote kid she's lost. It's like the 100th kid she's lost. I get it, but also you hate to see it. And this is such a powerful scene. I thought it was incredibly well written, because Daryl, he's being understanding. But he's also not like backing down and saying, "Oh, everything's fine. You know, I forgive you for all this." No, you're going to get people hurt here. And by the end of this episode, that torture comes into sort of clearer perspective when Carol is just like begging him to tell her how shitty and terrible she is. Right. It's like, oh God, no, you believe you deserve some kind of torment and you're leaning into that. And it's heartbreaking.
Well, and she doesn't, like, if she wanted revenge, that's one thing, but she's wanting stuff that she can't have. Like when she says, I don't want to just kill her. I want her to see the error of her ways. I want her to beg me to forgive this. And then, like, you can't do that, Carol. This is like the way many people get sucked into a codependent relationship. Like, they want to win the argument. They want to, like, with a person who's no longer operating under logic or any kind of like relational bounds, they want to get that concession from them. Like, well, you can leave and you can set boundaries and you can do, but you can't make a person admit they're wrong.
Sure.
Especially someone like Alpha. So like, I thought what Daryl says in the conversation is like, we don't fight for revenge. We fight for the future. That's what keeps us apart from all these other fuckers. And I thought that was really powerful. And the fact that Carol can't get on board with that, I mean, this is a real tough relationship problem, because regardless of whether what Carol does in the immediate future, there's been a huge breach of trust. Like Daryl says, like in another scene, I don't even feel like I can turn my back on you. That was before the ultimate betrayal, on top of these verbal like promises and stuff to not do this stuff. So like, I hope they really wrestle with this, because, you know, this has been one of the best relationships through the whole show, and it's in real trouble. It's in real jeopardy.
Yeah. And knowing that there is a spinoff show, there has to be some kind of repairing of this relationship before then, I would assume, unless the spinoff show is Carol versus Daryl and they're going to be hunting each other through the woods of Georgia and Virginia.
Or they're doing marriage counselor, not marriage counselor, couples therapy with like Father Gabriel. That's going to be, it's going to be like a weird kind of, you know, sitcom 30-minute show format.
Sure. I take that. I take Freddy versus Jason style knockdown dragon every week. Sure.
Spy versus spy, Carol versus Daryl. Mm. That's pretty good. That would be pretty amazing.
We'll see. See what it is. So Magna gets attacked by skin freaks. The group springs into action to save her and kills just a ton of them. There's like, I don't know, where are they getting all these freaks from? Like, I imagine you could convince like 5 out of every 250,000 people that you encounter to join your skin freak army. But they seem to have hundreds of people in this band of skin freaks. Where are they all getting all these lunatics?
I don't know, man. Like, on the other hand, you got those comet dudes. The Heaven's Gate got like what, 27 people to cut off their balls, wear track suits, and drink poison. So like,
I know nothing about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I had the same question. Like, I guess I thought the Whisperers were probably less than 100, probably more than 50, but less than 100. But I swear to God, we've seen somewhere between 12 and 20 die. Like, this is
every other episode.
But I don't know. Maybe there's like hundreds. Like maybe it's up to 500. It doesn't seem like it. But yeah.
I don't know where they're hiding them. You need a lot of dudes.
I guess you hide them within the horde. You know, you can always just have people milling around down there. You need that many people to control. Like how many Whisperer Wranglers do you need to control a herd of around 50,000? It's, you know, maybe we're just grossly underestimating it. And maybe these are also the dedicated, like, you know, these aren't the frontline troops. These are the cave dwellers that are kind of like babysitting the herd, right? So maybe they're not the ones that kind of walk around in the forest and shit. I don't know. Speculating here.
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough to imagine that many people joining this operation, but sure, we'll go with it. They run off into another section of the caves. They follow arrows that are carved into the wall and hope it'll lead them to an exit. Seems like it could be a trap, though.
Yeah. I mean, it could say, you know, you did the. I think it's a reasonable expectation to think the arrows are pointing the way out of the cave. Mm-hmm. But they could just as easily be pointing to, like, where the herd's toward. And that would be good. But, you know, we got to take a risk. What else? The other thing is you just wander aimlessly, I guess.
Right. So Negan tells Alpha that the spy might be within her own camp. He claims they have a lot in common and that he knows who the spy is. It's Gamma. Alpha puts a knife to his crotch and then drops him in a pile of her own shit.
Yeah, I found that the Whispers don't wipe. No wipe Whispers. They stand up and they're done.
That doesn't surprise me in the least. You got a group that wears dead, rotted flesh on their face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're not concerned about their ass. Trust me.
The snoot has been burned out. They're not saying no to too many.
The diaper rash they must have, though, right? Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, wiping your ass is not about necessarily. Like, I don't. Yeah, like, yeah. You just get all that off of your skin. You just it's an irritant, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's terrible acid. The swamp ass you would get. Walk around in jeans and in the Georgia heat. I know they're not in Georgia anymore, but they're DC still a swamp.
Yeah.
Oof.
I enjoyed the conversation here from Negan about like trying to prove that, you know, they're the same and compare their situations, because he did have a spy in his camp, right? He had Dwight in there doing his thing. Yeah, it's good. I like when the show has a memory like this and uses it to this kind of effect.
I was right in your situation. Are we still sure that Negan is playing a double agent here, or did he just defect?
That's a good question that I don't have the answer to. Guy's tough to read. That's why he's so good.
Yeah. Like, I thought for sure that this was just like him trying to get to a place where he could but maybe he's just like, you guys are too goody two shoes to play this dirty, dirty game they're playing. So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to find the fractures. But he's not it's like he's not generating a false conflict between Alpha and Gamma. He's giving Alpha good information about Gamma, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, we'll see where it leads.
Yeah, but yeah, the whole nut toss into the shit pit, that was exquisite. Really, really brought Negan up short. Preparing him for the odors that would come later during their lovemaking.
Oh, God.
That wasn't a dominance move. That was just him just making sure his nose is nice and burnt out before the climax to come. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all his lines about, people walking around like their shit don't stink. And he looks back at the pit. Well, I assure you, it does.
Yep.
Good stuff. So the survivors continue to what they hope is an exit from the caves. Carol's claustrophobia kicks in when they have to pass through a particularly narrow opening. Connie helps her through it with some handwriting. It's maybe too literal of a way to say it, but she spells you're okay out on her gloves, which I'm not even sure she can feel through the gloves. I don't know. Anyway, Jerry also has a hard time traversing the passage. Daryl makes it out, starts talking everyone else through it. Carol freezes up, but eventually makes it. And then Jerry stops and he looks back and he sees a bunch of walkers pursuing them. And of course, he gets stuck in this narrow passage and narrowly avoids being eaten thanks to his thick ass shoes. And they also find the rest of the horde.
See, I always thought you got to wear sturdy boots. You know, so many people in the early goings could have been saved if they just wore a leather jacket.
Yep.
Some sturdy pants, some like work grade Carhartt denim, and some work boots. So many people.
Yeah.
So many people. But yeah, we already talked about the scene. Like, it was a very effectively well done. I like the Jerry brought a wind up emergency flashlight that he's got. Hold on. To kind of build the tension, and Jerry's kind of goofy anyway, but then they use him as the hammer. It's an effective scene. You swing down there and there's like a crevice full of zombies coming at you.
Yeah.
We've seen some pretty grody things. I forget who the kid was that got stuck in the revolving doors, pushed up against the glass as zombies were like tearing him apart.
Was it Noah?
That's right. That was what his guy's name was. And like, he just died screaming and bloody right in front of us, full view. And I thought we were going to get that with Jerry. And I'm like, I don't know if I can handle this. And like Carol having a claustrophobia, which I love that scene. We didn't talk about that, but like Carol saying, I never told you I had claustrophobia, and his great line of, I only knew what you told me. I wouldn't know shit. I her getting by with a little help from her friends. I thought that was great. And I thought, damn it, I really thought that she was learning a lesson. I was so goddamn disappointed when I saw her go for the sweaty ass dynamite. But I thought that this was like, okay, this is where she's going to take. But no, she still hasn't hit rock bottom when it comes to this thing yet. She hasn't lost to Alpha enough.
Yeah, apparently. I kept thinking, man, if Jerry can just manage to kick to death one of these walkers behind him, he'll just stop up this whole tunnel and he'll be fine. Mm-hmm. But that's probably hard to do when you can't see behind you and you're scared shitless and I don't know.
Yeah. I remember I was parsing like each information, like, because like, I don't know how you view this, but I almost have like a bean counting of like, what is adding up all the signs and contra signs about Jerry dying. And when he said, my feet, they're biting my feet, I'm like, this is kind of objectively hilarious. And I don't think they would have, like, I think that's when I decided he was going to survive. Because I don't think they would be hamming up the comedy if he was about to then start screaming and blood start shooting from the cavern behind him.
I think that would be the perfect way for Jerry to go out. But I have a twisted sense of humor sometimes.
My feet. They got my feet. They're biting my feet. Like, yeah. I just thought that was fun. Like, I'm like, okay, he's probably going to die because there's no way the writers would make him look this stupid and buffoon right before they eat him like a barbecue. So that's what saved you, big man. Your comment. Never stop cracking the jokes, man. You can do that. They can't kill you.
Yeah, we love Jerry. He's great.
Ad lib.
So then Gamma is not, she's nowhere to be found in the camp. She never made it to the border. Alpha tells Beta to track her down and bring her in so she can deal with her. That seems kind of intercut with, strangely intercut, because the survivors are just kind of exploring this old mine shaft before that scene happens. And then they cut in that scene and they cut back to the mine shaft. I'm like, just pair those up. Don't cut between those.
I agree. And I it felt so video gamey because like there's this, you know, they're looking down at the passage they were at the beginning of the episode and they've spiraled and they've come. And now they so that's a classic video game scene. It's like, oh, look down below where you come.
Yeah.
And then it goes right into Minecraft because this cave just turns into a mine shaft. Mm-hmm. And that's always in. I did a little research because, like, I remember the sweaty dynamite, the sweaty, you know, it's all sweat nitroglycerin. It could. I remember so many. There's a couple episodes of MacGyver where they're harvesting the dynamite sweat or doing that stuff.
I remember this from Vertical Limit, that Chris O'Donnell movie.
Gotcha. Okay. I guess this is bullshit. That dynamite just straight up degrades over time to almost uselessness because it's a complex, unstable chemical and it just breaks. So anything that it, like what it, the stuff it's actually sweating is some kind of sodium compound that's like inert. So like
the sweatier, the better.
Yeah. Like that's from all I can tell that if you find sweaty dynamite, it's like, it's still dynamite. Like, you know, if it's 10% dynamite left, you don't want to just fucking play with like, you know, like start doing drum kit stuff with it. Right. But sure. It's not like, oh God, if we breathe on this, it's going to explode.
Okay.
Of course, you know,
that might explain the ending of this where the dynamite goes off and like literally next to Connie and Magna and they're fine.
Yeah.
And they show a shot where the cave-in is happening and they're just standing there like no explosion has gone off in a shaped narrow passage that would concuss them to death, I'm sure.
Well, that's the other thing is like they're leaning into the sweaty dynamite stereotype because just the cave-in itself triggers the spontaneous detonation of the rest of the dynamite. So you have this
kind of
truly
both ways.
Yeah, I don't understand how they could possibly survive, but they probably will.
I'm going to go through the rest of this scene. They find the sweaty dynamite. Jerry tells them to put it back. And as they dig out, Aaron questions why Magnus being so insane about getting out so quickly. She claims it's because of how she left things with Yumiko. But we know it's really because she wants to steal more supplies from the communities.
and she thinks she's got three sticks of dynamite shoved in her pants.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she can't trust anybody else with this stuff.
And I just kept thinking when I saw this dynamite, okay, this is the nuke, right? This is how they destroy the Horde. And
me too.
Carol apparently had that same idea.
Mm. I wonder how much damage has been done to the Horde, at all, if any. They do every trope of mines in this. Like you've got the mine cart, you've got the collapse cave-in, you've got the stack of dynamite, you got a canary cage.
Did you?
This is a mine shaft ass mine shaft, man.
Wow.
This is stereotypical mine shaft for sure. For sure, everything in central props was shoved in this thing. I'm surprised there wasn't like a skeleton with a miner's cap on or something.
For sure,
like a pickaxe, you know?
Right. Let's before we get to the best scene and the worst scene rolled into one in this entire episode. Let's take a quick break. I'll be right back.
I need one for this scene, sure.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Okay, talk me down, Aaron. This scene made me want to jump out my window and roll around in the street, because Alpha brings Negan to a private place in the woods. He can't, you know, he's Negan. He can't help but chatter the whole time. He thinks he's going to die. Sure. He's like trying to sort of find a way out of it, but kind of resigned to his fate as well. She tells him to strip down. He turns around and she's completely naked as well. And she reveals or rewards him for telling her about the spy by banging him. And he's apparently very turned on by this rotting carcass that she is wearing on her face that he has to mash his lips up against. No, I will not fuck you if you are wearing dead skin on your face of any type.
Yeah, what out of 10 zombie would she be at this point? I mean, she's got a pulse. I think that automatically makes her like a 12 out of 10.
Yeah, but she's up there.
Yeah, the oh man, it's Samantha Morton really swinging for the fences.
Yes.
You're a crass man, Negan. I feel like you'd appreciate a crass reward. I think she's wanted to climb this particular tree ever since he sauntered into camp.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, he's the cleanest of the bunch by far.
Oh, by a million. Yeah, by a million. And the thing is, here's the thing about Negan. This goes back to the question we just asked. I'm not sure that he's not into this, or if he's just like, you know, like Negan could be very into a zombie, or he and you know, perhaps being threatened, or perhaps having praying mantis death sex, like this could be some basic instinct shit, or he could do this just to be playing the part. I really don't know. I could go either way on him.
You remember that kid that he killed who also killed the kid and his mother?
Yeah.
And they were out raiding a walker. Yeah, of course you do. You just made a reference to it. Was that set up for this? Did they know we're going to have Negan fuck one of these whisperers, and so we need them to rate the dead?
Yeah, like he's not above it, like just a little bit, just to kind of pry the viewer's mind open to accept that. I don't know.
Ugh, I mean, I've seen it in a whole new
light. It would be a bad play to reject it, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you might just get killed.
This is like Temple of Doom rules. Like you can turn down the chilled monkey brains, but you're going to insult the guest, and that might mean you get enslaved to a thuggy cult. But it's something else. And then just like he keeps on like interrupting to ask questions, and like, you know, does this mean this? Or what about the praying mantis shit? And she finally says, "No more questions." They kiss. and we get the we get treated to the wide shot.
Oh,
so we
yes.
get this whole like body to body smoosh of these two people, and yeah, Morgan and Morton, the meeting of the Morgan and Mortons, the merging.
So the true Morgalizing.
The Morgan and Morton merge is how we're going to refer to this, the triple M. What do you think? Do you think that Negan can actually successfully wrap her around his little finger?
I'll say I think he has the best shot of anyone.
Because I don't think Alpha is particularly like, okay, she's definitely clever and smart in the planning and that kind of sense of the word. But I think she's pretty simple when it comes to people and understanding relationships and, you know, how to motivate. Like, I don't know. I think she's like,
especially this, someone who's not a follower. Right. Because Beta is like a natural follower. It's down to his name. Right. So like,
yeah,
you get Negan in Beta's role and shit gets weird fast.
I think she might want a king, and Beta's not a king. Gamma's not a king. Fucking Negan is, I think she's attracted to him. And I think he's just a straight upgrade of a Beta.
I think he's a dangerous Beta. Like, if she wants to remain Alpha, putting him in a Beta situation is a bad idea, because Beta's unwilling to, you know, scheme against Alpha, right? Beta is unwilling to try to push his will on the group.
I think he might start warming up to it with the shit that's going to be happening in this episode. Like, I almost thought when they went wide, we would see like Beta in the bushes kind of angrily muttering to himself.
Totally nude.
Yeah, not that he's sexually attracted to Alpha, but just like, you know, like the way a small child would be angry at their mom dating another man, you know. I can't wait to see the fucked up psychology is going to be taking place.
I wish she had had him put the leather jacket back on.
Right.
Like, strip down and put the jacket back
I'll
on.
Wear the mask.
Then,
you wear the jacket. Yeah, we both wear our skins.
It would have been metaphorically appropriate, but also just hilarious to see him nude from the waist down.
Do you think that Alpha, because Negan's obviously turned on by the praying mantis aspect, and like at least he's talked a big game about kneeling before women. Do you think that she also is attracted to the fact that he is a, like you mentioned, that he's a dangerous ass Beta? Like, do you think that there is a little bit of this, you know, eating pufferfish sushi? Like, hey, I'm doing something that's dangerous.
You know, I'm pretty happy saying I cannot read Alpha. I don't understand what motivates Alpha.
You got a window into her mind.
I have no read on that character whatsoever.
Don't got a handle on her. Yeah.
No. So I can't answer that question. Sorry.
Not crass enough, Jim. Not crass enough. Crass enough, man.
I am not. And I'm pretty damn crass. All right. Let's move on to the survivors digging their way out. Carol's missing.
And it's right underneath Negan and Alpha. Can you believe it? Kelly pops her head out and she's just staring right up into Taint and Grundle.
banging together.
I thought that'd be so fun. Like, I would love to do a mashup where her head pops out of that hole and it's just a wide shot of Negan and standing right over her. That would be
just insert that. Yeah.
Yeah. Given the geography, it's not impossible, right? Like, that'd be hilarious. Out of the frying pan into the fryer. Holy shit.
Well, with the Monster Mash song playing behind it.
They did the mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
So Carol's missing along with a couple of sticks of dynamite. Daryl goes off after her.
Oh, Jesus. That's what we can call Negan, the Negan and the Alpha love scene, the graveyard smash.
Oh, Jesus. I wish we had titles for these episodes, but we don't.
Squeeze.
I don't know how far to go with this, because this is the rest of the episode, right? Carol goes out to where the horde is. She's going to plant these dynamite sticks to collapse the cave on him. She slips. Daryl saves her. Carol knocks the dynamite into the chasm and the mine shaft begins to collapse and everybody's sort of rushing out. Kelly gets out. She fights off a bunch of skin freaks with Aaron's help as Jerry's holding the whole cave together with his brute strength. Magna and Connie go. Magna goes back in, and Connie follows her. This becomes a jumble.
Okay, I will say that like the lighting in this episode was not great. Like sometimes Agreed. It helped when like things were very chaotic and you kind of like got into the survivors where it's like, oh, how can you tell if it's friend or foe, who's winning, who's losing, which way is up or down. But in this stuff, this action, it became very difficult to see who was doing what and why.
Yeah.
So like I have a whole kind of like a lot of question mark. Like, why did Connie go back? Why did Magda? Like, I thought everybody was going out and. Like every 5 seconds they'd cut to Jerry just like doing his Hodor. Like first of all, they're like 18 inches below the surface.
Right. Like, if this thing collapses, great. We'll walk out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be covered up to your ankles in sod, apparently.
Right.
Yeah, but like I don't know. It reminds me of that silly scene in The Rundown. You know that movie where The Rock, you know, they go into some kind of temple and he's holding all these jiggling wood things, keeping the thing from collapsing. I'm like, what is the mechanics of this? I don't understand.
Yeah, and then later he drops it, right? And he just strolls right out. It's not like he just gets collapsed.
Yeah, it's like, right, yeah, I just get out of here. And it's the secondary explosion from the, I don't know. They're trying to make it real exciting, and they clearly didn't have a great set to real world location transition. So Jerry's wobbling underneath this giant ass girder. That was their. They're just like, hey, everybody's gonna be noticing Jerry wobble. They're not gonna notice anything else about it.
Everybody does make it out of this cave except for Magna and Connie, who are left behind as the rest of the dynamite blows and seals the shaft. Then Daryl's trying in vain to dig him out, and Kelly reminds him, hey, walkers and whisperers heard that. We need to get out of here. And Carol's like freaking out, begging Daryl to tell her how awful she is, that everything is her fault, and he won't do it. And then Daryl sends everybody home and tells them he's going to look for another entrance, and Carol is just kind of left alone sobbing in this field.
Yeah, she's like wanting Daryl to absolve her by punishing her.
Yeah.
When there's that's not how it works, Carol. You got to deal with the fact that you fucked us all here.
Or she's just like, I don't know. She seems to be driven by misery at this point, and this is almost a way for her to feed herself by having the person she's closest to tell her how awful she is. It's like,
right,
you know, her transformation will be complete to the dark side, right?
It's
a really fucked up mentality, but you see how she gets there, and the portrayal here I think is excellent.
And in the contrast of Daryl, who is like clearly invested, wanting to do this, you know, this doomed digging, he knows this isn't going to work, but like Kelly, you know, being the voice of what's Daryl going to do, like whirl around, but you don't care about Connie. It's like, she's her sister. And she's saying like, hey, we are not going to save anybody to the extent that anyone's able to be saved if we sit here and let ourselves be captured by the walkers or the whisperers. So I liked how they had that, you know, ready to shut Daryl down. But this thing, man, like, I think Norman, Norman Reedus doesn't have to act that often on this show, but when he does, he turns it on. Like, there was some real genuine hurt and anger and frustration at Carol.
It's super subtle. Like, he doesn't do anything big and showy with his acting, but you get everything you need to from it.
Yeah. So I don't know their relationship, man. And like, you can also tell that Daryl's just frustrated in general, because earlier in the episode, he's talking about, you know, Aaron, like, I was even jumpy. I don't know who to trust. Yeah. I feel like I can't trust you. Aaron's running off with that skin freak and doing the god. So like, it's a really fucked up situation. Like, no one in Alexandria is got a unified front. Like, we had that theory of like, well, maybe there's a shadow council of Aaron and Daryl and Carol, and that seems like it's true, but it turns out none of them are communicating or trusting each other fully either. So there's no one that's really in charge of the situation. Father Gabriel's going rogue. Yeah. Like, there ain't a Judith Alpha's needs plan to fucking declare martial law or something. Little ass kicker needs to be in charge.
Get Rick's gun out of the drawer. And
that's right. Load up the Python and go to work.
No, I mean, this is all a result of alphas picking at these communities, right? Death by a thousand cuts. It's working. It's working.
Yeah. Fragility of the of a free society. Look at that.
Yeah.
We got anything else that we want to talk about this particular episode?
I don't think
we squoze it. The squeeze has been squoze.
Sure has. Hodl your GameStop shares.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this week's episode on Squeeze. We'll be back with the next episode. See if Daryl can learn to trust Carol again. If there's enough gum in the world to get the taste out of Negan's mouth. Are Connie and Magna okay? Will Connie survive being cooped up with Magna? Be hangry and dehydrated for however long she has to? Tune in next week to find out. You can also send in feedback to watchingdead@baldmove.com for us to consider at the end of this. And that's it for the show this week. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.